Welcome to the Mother Wound Project podcast. I'm your host, Tandy, and today we're going to be talking about something that isn't often named, but very deeply felt. The long-term invisible trauma of growing up with a narcissistic or emotionally immature mom. If you find yourself constantly on edge, emotionally drained, hyper-aware of other people's emotions or moods, or feel like you're still waiting for the next explosion, I want to be clear, you're not broken. There's nothing wrong with you. You may be carrying the unseen wounds of CPTSD, chronic complex trauma that didn't come from one big event, but from years of emotional survival. So in this episode, I want to break down what CPTSD is. And this is not a diagnosis. I want to be clear, I am not a psychologist, but I'm just going to give you some signs to look for so that you can become aware if this is a possibility for you. I want to talk about how this can uniquely show up in daughters of narcissistic mothers or even emotionally immature moms. I am going to be doing a little overview of why traditional talk therapy doesn't always go deep enough. It takes years of unraveling and untangling, and I'm going to offer you some other tools that may be profoundly helpful for you if you find yourself in this situation. And these are the tools that helped me begin to feel safe in my own skin again after abuse and a lot of trauma. And some of those are hypnotherapy, somatic healing, nervous system regulation, and others. And we're going to go over a lot in a lot more detail those things later on. So if you've ever wondered why as an adult you still feel affected, why you have, maybe you jump at things, why you are always evaluating people's moods, anything that you may feel off, anxiety or, you know, any dysregulation, even if you are no contact, this is the episode you need. So let's begin. We're going to talk about what is CPTSD versus just your regular PTSD, which we hear about all the time. So when most people think of trauma, they imagine a single event, like a car accident, a natural disaster, a physical assault, something like that, witnessing someone being unalived or something like that, right? But complex post-traumatic stress disorder isn't about a single moment. So I think a lot of people are like, oh, I don't have PTSD because I didn't experience, maybe you didn't experience physical abuse or any, you know, very deeply traumatic single event. And so you think, oh, it can't be that. But this is about a lifetime of invisible injuries. And it's difficult to identify, especially when it comes from your own mom. You weren't hit by a truck. You were hit by criticism, neglect, emotional chaos, manipulation, gaslighting over and over and over again. And this changes you. CPTSD forms when your nervous system is shaped by an unsafe environment throughout childhood. And it's a repeated thing. It's not just being dismissed once or something like that. It is chronically living in this state all the time. So I'll give you some examples of experiences that daughters of narcissistic or emotionally immature moms might have that chronically experienced over time could contribute to CPTSD. So potentially being constantly criticized for grades, weight, clothing, personality, choices, friends, being forced into hobbies, sports, or church roles that you didn't want because they would make your mother look good. Being emotionally abandoned. So you may have been hurt, scared, or needing comfort. So for example, the situation that I talked about maybe a week or so ago, where I'm 9 years old, I've broke my arm. I had surgery from a pediatric orthopedic surgeon, and my mom goes home and leaves me in the hospital alone. That kind of abandonment. It's not, you know, physical abuse, but chronically experiencing these kind of things. I had another situation, being dropped off at a doctor's office to have a procedure at 13 years old, and I waited and had that procedure completely alone. And then the doctor actually drove me home. So these types of experiences, while they don't seem like massively traumatic big things, over time, this can lead to a situation of CPTSD. And again, that's only something that a psychologist can diagnose you with, but you can only seek that if you actually can recognize it, right? So that's what we're talking about today, is helping you recognize where you're at. So another one, being left alone too young. So the first time I was left home alone, I was 5 years old. And my mom went out to do a church assignment with a neighbor and left me home alone. She probably doesn't even remember it, honestly. And if she heard about it, she would probably deny it, as you all are probably very aware of. Having to walk on eggshells around her moods or outbursts, depending on your mom's presentation of emotional immaturity or narcissism. She may have had outbursts or rages or moods, and sometimes it may have just been her being emotional, playing the victim or crying, not necessarily angered towards you. But you could have been yelled at, shamed, or potentially even physically abused. Again, it just depends on how your mother presented with this, because not every mother that's emotionally immature or narcissistic is physically violent or even yells. Covert narcissists don't generally do this. So your experience could be different, but just because she didn't physically abuse you or yell at you does not mean that you may not be experiencing this CPTSD from what you experienced. Being treated like a burden, a project, or even an extension of her ego instead of a child with your own needs. Again, this is just this chronic experience of even your very existence being invalidated can be very traumatizing to a child over a lengthy period of time. She may have given you the silent treatment. She may have emotionally withdrawn from you. She may have given you, been passive aggressive, or guilt tripped you if you disappointed her. Again, this all becomes very chronic. Having no safe adult to talk to cry to, or to be held by when your world was falling apart. This is the trauma that hides in plain sight, because there are no bruises. There is no physical evidence. It doesn't just affect your memories. It rewires your identity, and it's really, really, really important to understand this. So the key symptoms of CPTSD from maternal narcissism: chronic guilt and shame. So you really struggle with a lot of shame. You make a normal mistake, and you're shaming yourself. You have that bully in your own head. You are your own bully. So if your thoughts are constantly ruminating on bullying yourself and shaming yourself, this is definitely a symptom of probably a parent, that dialogue that is still in your head. And I know I definitely had this. You may have emotional flashbacks. So this isn't the flashback of, you know, a war veteran flashing back to a traumatizing event. This is an emotional flashback where you're having anxiety, panic, maybe painful memories, something like that. You may be hypervigilant to people's tone of voice, facial expressions, or any indication of disapproval. If you're scanning the room, you're hypervigilant or hyper aware of the people's emotions in the room. Fawning, so people pleasing or feeling like you have to earn your worth. Perfectionism, I know people love to think that perfectionism is a good thing. It is not. It just causes a lot of harm, because nobody can meet that standard. And so it's completely useless to hold yourself to that level and then shame yourself for not being able to meet it. Identity confusion. So this, in a sense, is like, who am I when I'm not managing her emotions or managing someone else's emotions? Sometimes we don't know where to find our worth and our value when we are not doing the things that she required. So if you were kind of her fixer, caretaker, you were her emotional support, you struggle to know who you are outside of managing other people's emotions or people pleasing. You don't know what you like and what you want outside of people pleasing. So that's what I mean by identity confusion, is not really knowing your authentic self. Others may be emotional numbness, anxiety, low self-worth, deep fear of abandonment, and there's many, many others. But if this is starting to sound familiar, I want you to just recognize where this came from. You are a survivor of emotional trauma, chronic emotional trauma, and naming it is the first step towards reclaiming your truth, reclaiming yourself. Over time, this shapes your identity. It isn't just about memories of being abandoned or memories of being guilted or shamed or whatever. It starts to shape your identity because this is how you were raised, how you grew up, and how your beliefs about yourself were shaped. Chronic self-doubt, perfectionism. When I talk about emotional numbness, a lot of times you get a huge promotion at work and you don't feel the elation emotions over that. You feel numb. You graduate from college and instead of being excited and proud of yourself, you're numb. This is your nervous system's way of coping when it feels too much. This isn't, you know, chronic self-doubt, all these things. It's not being overly sensitive. And it doesn't mean that something's wrong with you when you're struggling to feel emotion. It's the result of living for years in a psychological war zone without really having the ability to name it or understand it. And I want you to know that you are not alone in what you are feeling. There's nothing wrong with you that you feel emotionally numb. It's a survival mechanism that your brain created. And it takes a lot of different modalities and ways of working through this trauma to come out on the other side. And now I want to talk about kind of more in depth about this experience that you have in childhood. Because it wasn't just what she did. It's how it shaped who you had to become in order to survive her. Constant gaslighting fractures your reality. It leads to self-doubt, dissociation. It can cause you to question yourself, question your memory, question if something's wrong with you. Being the family scapegoat or golden child, there's going to be different results from that. But being the golden child, for example, trains you to perform for love. And this is where the golden child oftentimes can end up in toxic romantic relationships because you're used to performing for love and you're constantly looking for that validation. Maybe never being allowed to feel anger, not even understanding how to set boundaries teaches you suppressing your emotions and allowing people to treat you in ways that you shouldn't, because you've allowed your own mother to treat you in ways that you should not be treated, and you get used to being treated poorly. And what also happens is your mom's inability to take responsibility and accountability and apologize, you struggle to know what it's like to repair a relationship when you are hurt. So a lot of times, like I said, you accepting treatment that you don't deserve, that you should never accept, and then also not requiring accountability and apology and repair because you're not used to it. Your mom's never going to do that. You also did not receive empathy from your mother. If you have an emotionally immature or narcissistic mother, you did not get empathy. She did not apologize to you. She really didn't care much for your emotions. And this keeps you stuck in an emotional freeze and an inability to fully understand healthy relationships. So a lot of people, I hear them say, oh, I'm no contact. It's been the greatest thing ever. Good. That's great. But you're not done. That's like step number one. There is so much emotional damage that is done that if we don't do the inner work, our relationships with our own children, with romantic partners, with anyone else is never going to be fully healthy unless you heal completely. So low contact, no contact, whatever it is that you think you've done is great. But when you grew up in survival mode, your nervous system never came out of it. You don't just outgrow this. You outgrow the environment that caused it, but the trauma moves in with you, right? And if it is CPTSD, this isn't something that you just, oh, I went no contact with my mom. I got rid of the source, so I'm good. Mm-mm. That's not how this works. And whether it's CPTSD or not, just emotional harm and damage that's been caused, or harmful belief systems about yourself, relationships, whatever the result is, even if it is not a situation of CPTSD, it may show up in ways that you don't even recognize as a trauma symptom, that you don't even recognize that you're showing up, even showing up for yourself in toxic ways or allowing things that you shouldn't. You might look high functioning on the outside, holding it together, checking all the boxes, and like, look at me, like I am, this is it. But inside, you may have anxious attachment. You may feel disconnected at times, exhausted, stuck in survival mode. You may be high functioning, but there may be a lot of things going on inside. You may have an inner critic. You think, oh, I'm a perfectionist. No. No. Just because you're extremely successful doesn't mean you're healthy emotionally. So we really need to look, like really sit down, really reflect. Really think about what's driving you. Are you feeling anxiety? Do you feel disconnected in emotion, in relationships, emotionally in relationships? How is this showing up? And I think you might find if you grew up with a narcissistic mother, you may find that there are threads of this wrapped around your life, your relationships and things that needs to be unraveled. So I want to talk about how this may show up in an adult daughter, whether CPTSD or whatever. Overthinking every text, every tone, every silence, wondering if you've upset someone. You replay conversations in your mind over and over and over. So let's say you go out with the girlfriends and you come home that evening. And you're replaying what you said and replaying conversations in your mind. Even if you're not like, oh, that was dumb or whatever, you're just replaying it over and over and over. Your brain is ruminating on it. You're overthinking, like, I sent a text. Oh, no. You're thinking about, should I have said something else? Should I have said it a different way? Or if someone, you text someone and they don't text back for a couple days, are you ruminating on that, worrying about it? Or you freeze when someone is disappointed in you. It hits deep. Your nervous system shuts down just like it did when you were a kid. You may fear and have an irrational fear when you say no to something. Like love will be taken away from you if you set a boundary. Or you're like, no, I'm not going to go. I don't want to do that. Or I'm not able to go or whatever. There is this just automatic fear that shows up when you have to say no or when you have to set a boundary. Or you apologize constantly. I'm sorry. Are you okay? Is that okay? You're constantly policing other people's emotions, even when you didn't do anything wrong. You know, if a partner or a friend or someone comes out and you're like, are you okay? Are you mad at me? I'm so sorry. Like, This is part of what you've been trained to do, policing your mom's emotions, apologizing to her because she played the victim, she gaslit, all of that. This is something that needs to be worked on because you are abandoning yourself for everyone else. You may have crippling self-doubt, feeling like you can't trust your own decisions and your own judgment. Now, there's a woman that I know, and I'm not going to say a whole lot about it because I don't want to, give up who she is or whatever, but she struggles so much with decisions that she will purchase an item and return items over and over and over. She can't even buy a pair of shoes without questioning herself. Maybe I shouldn't have bought those shoes. Maybe they cost too much. Oh, maybe I don't like these shoes. Maybe I should buy other ones. She doesn't even know what she likes. She can't make a decision and stick with it. She can't even make a decision about what color to paint her nails, and has had someone at the nail salon. She will pick a color. They paint 3 of her fingernails and she has them take it off and picks another color over and over and over for hours on end. I'm not kidding you. This can be so incredibly damaging to your ability to trust yourself, to trust your intuition, to trust your decisions, to trust your judgment. It is so important that you learn to love yourself, to trust yourself. If you are struggling, and you may not be that dramatic, okay? It doesn't have to be that dramatic, but I'm giving you a dramatic example. But even struggling to trust your own intuition or second-guessing yourself, you really need to look at where that's coming from and work on a lot of those issues. This is where we heal, not just by saying, I'm no contact, it's all good. Nope, that's not how this works. You may feel too much. So you may have really strong emotions. So this could look a lot of different ways. You may implode. So that means you go internal. So there's the bully comes up. You may cry. This may make you feel like you can't do anything. You want to quit your job. You want to quit doing things that you love. It's just this implosion emotionally. Okay. Or you may explode, because you just can't take anymore. So you yell, you rage, you do things that feel a little over the top for the situation, and you feel really guilty afterwards, and you don't understand why you either collapse into not even being able to function, crying, that kind of thing, or exploding irrationally. That would be feeling too much. Or you may feel nothing at all. You may feel numb. You may struggle to feel love and connection in your romantic relationship. You may feel numb towards a lot, towards friendships, towards enjoyable things, towards big events in your life. And this is because emotional safety was never modeled for you and you didn't experience it. And so you may be at a point in your life where you can't take one more thing. And so you're either exploding or crying and imploding or just gone completely numb because you can't take anymore. This is another state that we need to move beyond and be able to get out of in order to be a healthy, functioning adult. You may become a caretaker, peacemaker, or fixer in other relationships, friendships, romantic relationships, wherever that might be. Always scanning the room, always anticipating others' needs, trying to keep the peace, literally abandoning yourself to try to take care of others. Why? Because this is the pattern that you lived in with your mother, that you grew up worrying about her emotions, her moods, you know, kind of trying to tiptoe around, and you end up doing that in other relationships. I see this so many times, and really, this is something that's praised in our society. And so sometimes we think we're just a great person, like we're nailing it because we care so much about our romantic partner or our friends. But what we don't realize is we are abandoning ourselves and we don't even know ourselves. Like, you don't even know what you would want to do because you're so worried about everyone else. This is actually problematic. There is a balance here that needs to be had, not just constant fixer, caretaker, peacemaker, anticipating other people's needs, because you matter too. And we need to get you to that place where you realize that I matter and what I want matters too. It doesn't mean I always get my way, we always have to do what I want, but it means that your voice also matters. Okay. You may have a constant gnawing feeling of not being good enough. No matter how much you do, no matter how much you achieve, you just don't feel good enough. And you might believe that you deserve to not feel good enough. That you're like, no, but I'm really not. No, that's not true. You have accepted your mother's voice, her words as truth. And if that's the case, we definitely need to work through that. Because you deserve to feel good about yourself and not have that bully in your head. Even if you're no contact, your mom could live in your head. And you may not even realize that that's what's happening. Another thing that daughters may experience is relationships being confusing. You may attract partners that mirror your mother's behavior. And this is not uncommon to have happen. And you may emotionally shut down to avoid being hurt. So even if you have a partner that is healthy and loving and all of that, you may shut down or struggle to have the deep connection and feelings because you fear being hurt, abandoned, whatever. So in order to have healthy relationships, you really need to make sure that you are in a healthy state after experiencing this. Now, experiencing some of these things doesn't necessarily mean CPTSD, okay? I'm not saying, oh, if you are scanning the room, anticipating people's needs, oh, you have CPTSD. I'm not diagnosing you. I'm giving you some time to reflect. And if you're feeling profound things, you may want to look into that. Because if you're identifying with a lot of emotional struggles, struggles in relationships, struggles believing in yourself, like things that are profoundly affecting your life, this is the imprint of growing up in an emotional war zone where love was conditional, connection was unstable, and your nervous system had to adapt to survive. And if you are struggling in your relationship with yourself, your relationship with other people, you know, you're struggling with being emotionally numb or emotionally overreactive, and you're seeing all of these patterns in yourself, it's like, we might want to look into this. Because you're not going to live a happy, fully fulfilled life if you are living chronically in a lot of these patterns. But I want you to understand that there is hope. Because what was wired can be unwired. We can reset this. We can unwire this. And that's what we're going to explore a little bit later. So stay tuned because we're going to explore how we unwire this stuff. I want to acknowledge why some of this still hurts or affects you, whether you are no contact or not. So even if you have physically separated from your mother, like there is no contact, the subconscious programming and trauma loops are still running. That doesn't stop the programming and the trauma loops. If you haven't gone low contact, the anxiety you feel when you have to see her, the mental and physical exhaustion you feel after talking to her, your body still anticipates the threat because the threat is constantly, you know, it's like, oh, you know, I show up for Easter or I show up for the 4th of July or whatever holidays or times that you see her. This is nervous system dysregulation. It's not weakness. It's nothing that's wrong with you, but you may feel this. Emotional flashbacks that are involuntary, triggers that may not even be conscious. The inner mother still criticizes you. In your mind, that's whether you're in contact with her or not. Even if you've cut off contact, blocked her number, finally said it's enough, why does it still hurt? Like I said earlier, going no contact removes the source, but not the programming. Your nervous system doesn't know she's gone. It still flinches when the phone rings. It still tenses when someone raises their voice. It still braces for impact every time you set a boundary. That's trauma. I want you to take a breath I want you to recognize if these are things you feel. Because even without her presence, the effects still linger. If you feel instant guilt for protecting yourself, for setting a boundary, for saying no. If you wonder if you're being dramatic or unfair, oh my goodness, have I had that one so many times. If you still hear her voice in your head judging you, criticizing you, shaming you, you may dream about her. You may argue with her in your head. You're still trying to explain yourself to a ghost. You freeze when someone gets upset, afraid it will spiral into emotional punishment, gaslighting, guilt tripping. You people please friends, coworkers, partners, afraid of being seen as too much or selfish. This is the trauma loop at work. Your mother may be gone, may or may not, depending on your contact with her, but the imprint of her still lives in your body, your thoughts, your sense of worth, and in your mind. And that's why traditional talk therapy alone isn't always enough. You can understand what happened. You could go to your therapist and they say, yes, this is CPTSD or this is XYZ, whatever they say, but you're still stuck in it. You can talk about it. You can understand it. But the unraveling is slow. The rewiring in that scenario is slow. In order to truly heal, you need tools that reach the subconscious mind and regulate the nervous system. And this is where hypnotherapy became really powerful for me, to rewrite the inner voice and break the subconscious loyalty patterns. And I will tell you, ruminating thoughts was the first thing that I did hypnotherapy for, and it was game-changing. One session. And I remember, I didn't even realize it. I had my session. I had been having ruminating thoughts 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, nonstop, struggling. I have my session in the morning. I go about my day, and I'm getting ready for bed that night, and I stop. And I pause and go, I didn't have any ruminating thoughts today. It just silence. One session. This is why there are so many different modalities that we can implement to have a total inner healing from this. And I am here to tell you it can happen. I have experienced this myself. I also use somatic practices to calm the body and discharge survival stress. I've had to do this at times. I am still low contact with my mom, and that is, it may not work. I will put it that way. I have recently just experienced massive, condescending, very hurtful comments. My mom actually weaponizing scripture against me. And I don't know if low contact is even going to work. But because I am still in some contact with her, I have these like immense stress. If I go to a family event or whatever, I am taking deep breaths before I walk in. I mentally prepare myself. And there's a lot of meditation and nervous system regulation that has to happen when I leave. I've also done a lot of inner child work. And I do, when I work with my clients, we may work on with a hypnotherapy session. We may do a guided meditation, doing inner child work to reparent the wounded parts that are still frozen in time. I actually do this on myself to create that safety and to reparent that inner child. Sometimes we do coaching sessions. It just depends on what is needed in that moment. But I do want to point out very powerfully that healing doesn't start with logic. It doesn't start with the conscious mind. That is like the gatekeeper. And it's really hard to get past that gatekeeper down into the subconscious programming that you have with talk therapy, with talking about it. And that's why I don't even just offer only coaching, because there are certain things that can be worked at, and that is a great modality. Coaching or therapy or any of that is a great modality, but on its own, it's slow. And we want you feeling safe in your own body. We want those ruminating thoughts to stop now, right? So let's talk more about these tools that will help you heal. You can't think your way out of trauma. You have to feel your way through it safely, and you have to reprogram the nervous system, the subconscious mind, out of its programming. It's not just about understanding your mother's dysfunction. It's about reclaiming your body, your truth, and your sense of self. When you've experienced long-term emotional abuse, neglect, maybe physical abuse, manipulation, that trauma becomes embedded in your nervous system and in your subconscious mind. And that is why healing has to happen on every level, mind, body, soul. And it's not just mind in, I'm going to talk about it. It's mind in, I got to reprogram the subconscious wiring there. So as I said, hypnotherapy is one of the most powerful tools for daughters of narcissistic mothers. Because narcissistic abuse programs you subconsciously to abandon yourself. My needs don't matter. I'm too sensitive. If I set a boundary, I won't be loved. Feeling responsible for her happiness, all of these things. Or the inner critic that won't be quiet, or the ruminating thoughts. All of these things are autopilot in your brain. The ruminating thoughts, the constantly questioning yourself, the inner bully, the inner painful dialogue, all of the things. And no amount of journaling, talking about it, or any of that is going to rewire this. That's why we go to hypnotherapy for this. We access the inner child, the teenage self, through the subconscious mind. This child that's still frozen in fear. This child that still feels like she's not good enough. We reframe the old story from shame to sovereignty. Allow your own subconscious to create new beliefs like, I am safe to choose me. I am worthy, even when I say no. Disconnect from subconscious guilt, ruminating thoughts, and all those beliefs that you're not good enough. That those things that are keeping you stuck. This isn't just changing your mindset. This is rewiring your programming and identity. You get to release the version of you that was built to survive your mother and become someone new. And that's what I love so much about hypnotherapy. And I could talk about it all the time because it was so life-changing for me. But let's talk about some other things. CPTSD or a lot of these traumatic events, whatever, live in the body, not just in your memory. It's a felt experience. Tightness in your chest, pit of your stomach, butterflies. You know the feelings you get in your body, those emotions, how they're felt. Your breathing patterns change, hyper-awareness of facial expressions, freezing in the face of conflict, that tension, the tension in your shoulders, clenching your jaw, all of that. Those are all things that are happening in your body, right? So I've tried breath work, but as someone who struggles with panic attacks, the hard breath work, so the inhale, inhale, exhale, really, really quick breath work would trigger such horrendous panic attacks for me. I couldn't hardly stand myself. I could not finish it. And I don't know if you've done those types of breath work, but it's a really quick. That does not work for people who have any form of PTSD, panic attacks, anxiety. It can, but I don't personally recommend it. So I would work more with titrated breath work, which is slow and controlled breath work that helps regulate the nervous system gradually and building safety over time. And that is something that helps you kind of get in that nervous system regulation in your body. Vagus nerve stimulation. So that would be humming, putting cold water on your face, lightly tapping. We'll have lightly tapping on the chest. There's different things you can do to tone the vagus nerve, which will shift you into parasympathetic calm. And there's a lot of things that you can do for that. And I use a lot of these techniques with my clients. Self-holding techniques. So cross your arms over your chest. So it's like opposite hand to opposite upper arm, and just gently squeezing your upper arms, like you're hugging yourself and gently squeezing. You can also rock slowly side to side, letting your body just rock and feel that safety, taking breaths that's comfortable to you, inhaling and exhaling slowly. You can also do orienting practices. So usually the 5 technique is a bit much. It's a little harder to do. I usually do 3. But you would name 5 things you can see, 4 things you can touch, 3 things you can hear, 2 things you can taste, 1 thing you can smell. That can be a lot. You're like at work and like, I ain't tasting anything at my desk at work, right? So sometimes we'll do the 3 where we would name 3 things you can see, 2 things you can touch, and 1 thing you can hear. And that one's the easiest that you can do in a public place. And that just grounds you in the moment. And then you just tell yourself, I am safe. I am safe in this moment as you're doing that. So you look around the room. What can I see? Okay, I see the curtains. I see this plant on my desk. I see my calendar over there on the wall. Taking a breath. Okay, now I'm going to do 2 things I can touch. I have a blanket on my lap, a knitted blanket on my lap. I can feel the texture of that knitted blanket. And I can also feel just kind of the arm of this chair. And then what can I hear? I can hear the humming of the computer. I just did that. So I'm orienting myself in the room, grounding myself in this space, in this moment, so that my brain's not running all over the place, right? Take a breath. I am safe. I'm in the present moment and I'm safe. That is an orienting practice. And then one other thing, love, is walking meditation. A lot of my clients struggle with anxiety, panic attacks, ruminating thoughts. It's way too painful to do a regular meditation where we're sitting, we're quiet. Even if we have meditation music, sometimes I'll say, well, use meditation music and see if that works. Sometimes it doesn't. But movement discharges the freeze responses and discharges a lot of that anxious energy. And some people are like, I can't do yoga because you're holding poses too long. They get anxiety coming up. I love yoga, but it doesn't work for everyone either. Walking meditation is kind of my go-to. Walk outside. It needs to be in nature. It needs to be quiet. We're not in crowded spaces overwhelming our senses and our nervous system. So if there's a quiet park in the morning or later in the evening, wherever you feel safe, obviously we need to make sure that this is a safe location. I do it on my own property, but I live on 40 acres. And my husband, darling, amazing husband that he is, he has graded walking trails on the 40 acres. And so I go out on the 40 acres. Sometimes I don't have meditation music. Sometimes I do. Depends on where I'm at. If it's times where I'm anxious and ruminating thoughts, I will use music. But I can walk a mile on those trails. So of course I feel safe because I'm on my own property. But find a place where you feel safe in nature, a park or somewhere that you feel safe. Walking with conscious breathing and bringing you back into your body and feeling comfort. I would recommend nature sound meditation. You can find a lot of stuff on YouTube, but music that feels good to you. You can use solfeggio frequencies. 528 is great. Some of the lower frequencies may work for anxiety. 963 is a great one, depending on what resonates with you. I wouldn't recommend binaural beats music for beginners, but it can also just be, you know, you're hearing water trickling, birds singing, whatever, and just walk for 30 minutes. If you can only do 15, that's also fine. At least 15 minutes of walking in nature, and that helps discharge a lot of that stress. And I recommend either morning or evening. To kind of help as well. And that's not like going to fix everything. This is just, you know, a modality to help with a lot of this anxious energy. And somatic healing, these somatic practices, is where a lot of survivors find their first real exhale with all of this stressful pent up energy that they've had in their body for so long. We also, in the coaching realm of things, working with thought reframing and your inner dialogue work. So when you're raised by an emotionally immature mom or a narcissistic mother on anywhere on this spectrum, you may inherit her voice as your own. So you're your own inner bully. I can't do anything right. I can't believe I said that. That was so stupid. That kind of stuff, right? The thoughts of that you're worthless, that all of that. To heal, first you have to identify the inner critic. Because obviously if we just let it run, it's like you have a toddler in your brain that's constantly like, you're so stupid. Why are you doing that? You always do everything wrong. That was a dumb decision. Take that back. You shouldn't have spent that money. You know, all of that stuff. First, we are going to identify this critic, and then we are going to lovingly remove her from the mic. Okay? So, I want you to notice, okay? I can't believe you did that. Whatever it is. I don't know what your inner voice says, but I'm just going to use some basic, vague ones, right? Notice it. Oh, I just noticed. I'm like, I can't believe you did that. That was so stupid. That, let's just say that thought went through my mind. I need to become aware of it. Where did that come from? Whose voice is that? Right? You can't do anything right. Who used to tell you that? Where is that coming? That is not yours, honey. I'm telling you, you are not born telling yourself this stuff. Nobody is. That came from somewhere. Somebody taught you to shame and guilt yourself and feel like you're worthless. Someone taught you that. And you don't have to identify it. Oh, my dad, my mom. No. I just want you to recognize, oh, that's not my voice. That is the guilt, the shame, the all of that programming. Just identify it as that. It's just the programming. Okay. And you can even name your inner critic. I named mine the gremlin. So it's like, as soon as I feel guilty, I shouldn't have said that or whatever it is. That was dumb. Oh, that's the gremlin. That's the gremlin. Okay. You can name it whatever you want. So instead of having to be like, this is coming from my mom or my programming, just give it a name. Okay, gremlin. You don't get the mic. Right? But I want you to replace whatever that thought was. So if you're thinking, I can't believe I said that, if you're thinking that was a dumb decision, we're going to reframe that. Okay? I made the best decision I could in that moment. Or however you have to frame it. Now, it has to be something that you can believe. It can't be like, I make amazing decisions all the time. If you don't really believe that, that just isn't going to work. And your body and your brain is not going to accept it. So it does have to be something that you can accept, right? And just start practicing reframing things in a more positive light. And however that will work for you. And I do want to emphasize that the most invisible wounds often take the longest to heal. The bruise is going to heal a lot faster than the emotional wound behind it. But that doesn't mean that those wounds aren't real, and it doesn't mean that they can't heal. This is real. This is hard. And it makes sense that you're still feeling it. You didn't cause it. But you do have the power to end it. We need to just train your nervous system to relearn safety. You're rebuilding trust with the one person she taught you to abandon. And that's you. If this episode spoke to your pain, here's your next step. Take the mother wound archetype quiz. And that will help you kind of understand that mother wound that you have. There is also a free guide. So it's free to take that quiz. There's a free guide that comes with it to kind of help you understand and help you start navigating those early boundaries and navigating that early, those early first few steps. But if you're kind of in a space of like, I know, like I was my mom's emotional support, or I know I was the scapegoat. If you feel like you know that, you can still take the quiz. That's fine. And those ebooks are great. But if you feel like you're ready for the next step, I also have a mother wound healing or mother wound recovery kit, which is, again, a little bit deeper. And you can get that on my my website, which is themotherwoundproject.com. And links to those are also on my Instagram. If you're following me on Instagram, at themotherwound. What is it? Why can I not think of that? Themotherwound.project. Yeah, that's what it is. Links are there also. Definitely follow me on Instagram. There's a lot of amazing content there that will help you and very much help you feel seen. And if this resonated with you, share it. Share it with other women that you know have struggled with a mother wound. Follow, subscribe, leave a review. That would really help me out a lot, because we really need to get this message out to more daughters so that they can find the healing space that they need. You're not too sensitive. You're just finally safe to rise and to heal. Until next time.